Good morning. Today's daf in Bamitzia is Nun Zayin. We're Nun Vav Amud Beis. We're going to be beginning this morning with by Rabbi Zeris Chirus. We are back to the topic of Onah. Here we are in the fourth parak of the Masechta, and we are covering halachas regarding Onah. And we have just covered the Mishnah in yesterday's daf regarding that there is no Onah as it relates to Karka, Navadim, Mishtaros, and Hekdeshos. So there's not going to be Onah. We're going to be discussing that in more detail just a little bit later on this morning. But in the meantime, however, before we get there, so by Rabbi Zera, so Rabbi Zera wants to know, are there other things that are also going to be excluded from Onah? So Rabbi Zera wants to know, Schirus. So Yesh Lo Onah, Ein Lo Onah. So is Schirus going to be included or not included on Onah? Schirus over here is where I'm renting out an item. So I'm renting out an item, and obviously, in other words, there's a market. And because there's a market, so that means that there's a fair market value, a fair market price to how much I'm going to rent it out for. The question under review is that whether or not there's going to be subject to the rules of Onah. That if I overcharge or undercharge, so then there would be a violation of Onah. And presumably that means to say that if I went over a six or I went under a six, so then the whole deal will fall apart. Meaning the rental will fall apart. In other words, we could just both just take back our ends of the deal. Anyway, so is there going to be Onah by Schirus? So, so Dilma Loshna. And the Gemara succinctly puts down the two sides of this question. On one hand, the Torah says that the Isser of Onah is by Memkar, which means that it's a sale. And this is and over here, this is a rental. It's different. Oh, Dilma Loshna, maybe no. Maybe it's no different. Maybe, as far as the Torah is concerned, the Torah is looking at any type of contract, a financial contract. So a financial contract usually comes in the form of a sale, but it also could come in the form of a rental as well. So Amalei Abayi Miksiv Memkar Laola Memkar Stamiksiv. So Vahinam Ibiyama Mechirehi. So the Gemara says, well, if you look at the pasuk, you'll notice what the pasuk doesn't say. It doesn't say Memkar Laolam. The Torah doesn't say a permanent sale. The Torah just simply describes it as a sale. If I'm selling something for a day, otherwise what you and I would call a rental, that also is called a sale. And as a result of that, that would fall under the category of Onah. So the Gemara's conclusion seems to be very clear that there is Onah by Schirus as well. By Rava Chitin Zar Bekarka. Okay, so we're now going to go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah yesterday told us that there is no Onah when it comes to Karka, which again, at face value means that when I sell you property, so we are not going to be bound by any quote-unquote fair market value. In other words, whatever we agreed upon in terms of the price, that's going to be the sale. The sale is final. Despite the fact that we sold it for a lot or we sold it for a little, there is not going to be any regulation of Onah. That's a simple pshat of the Mishnah. We already pointed out yesterday when we read the Mishnah, not everyone's on board with that pshat. But anyway, there is no Onah when it comes to Karka. So with that in mind, so by Rava, Chitim Bazar B'Karka Mahu. So what would be the following? And that is that we harvested wheat, and then we took the kernels and we put them in the ground. And before they took root, so what I then did is I sold the wheat while underground. I sold that wheat to a buyer. So now, is this going to be subject to Onah? Yes or no? Mahu. So, yesh lam Onah, ein lam Onah. The Gemara goes over two sides of this question. So on one hand, keman deshaja bekadadamya, yesh lam Onah, odilma batlino agavara. So the fact that they are now submerged and they're underground, so one of two ways to look at it is, I'll go in the order of the Gemara, is that basically the ground is holding it. The ground is no different than a container. And so if I sell something and it's in a container, it's subject to the rules of Onah. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, but linu agav ara. No. In other words, once I put it in the ground, it now becomes part and parcel of the ground. The ground gives it the status of karka, and therefore it is not going to be subject to Onah. So the Gemara now goes over these two sides, explores the question of, I'm selling wheat, but before I sold the wheat, I put it into the ground, I buried it in the ground, didn't take root yet. If it took root, obviously it's becoming part and parcel of the ground. Hasn't taken root yet, and is it going to be subject to the rules of Onah? So, hey, chidami ile madamar ihu shadabashisam. So the Gemara says, I want to understand exactly what the case actually looked like. What happened? And if the what happened over here is that I told you that there were six sa'a that was submerged, that's subterranean, and that's what I'm selling. And also Sadivamila Shadu Al Khamisha. And then witnesses come and contested that your sale. Meaning, and the contestation over here is, you didn't sell six, you sold five. Meaning, you thought that there were six saws underground. There aren't six saws underground. We watch you weigh it before you put it underground. It's five underground. And so over here, there was a deviation. Thank you. There was a deviation. We went from six to five, and that is a deviation that is ona worthy. Parenthetical note, by the way. In other words, we went from the number six down to the number five, which is not exactly a six. Going from... Okay, anyway. There are mathematical challenges to go from six to five, but if you remember the beginning of the perek, so we noted that ona can go work in one of two directions. It can go directionally from the price to the actual value, or can go from the actual value to the price. Okay, anyway. And that was Shita Shmuel. If you understood that, great. If not, just go back to the beginning of the perek. Anyway, comes out over here that this is not going to be an example of ona. Why is this not going to be an example of ona? I'll tell you why. So I'm a Rava called Avar B'midah B'mishkal B'minyan Afilo Pachos Mechtei Ona Chozer. If it's something which is quantifiable, and over here the terms of the sale went against just simple numbers, meaning we contracted I'm going to sell you six saw, and meanwhile I only sold you five, there, even if I only sold you 5.9, right? It's a violation of ona. In other words, ona is only when we are off by valuation. Ona is not going to be, there's no margin of error when we're talking about the actual quantity. Thank you. When we're talking about the actual quantity. So good. So the Gemara says like this. So no. So that can't be the example under discussion. So Ella Damar Yushadabai Kid Ibaile. So the Iglai Milsa Lo Shadabai Kid Ibaile. So the what is at odds between buyer and seller is the following. So I'm telling you that what I did is I planted in the ground appropriately. And what turns out now is that no, it's not true. In other words, he didn't plant it in the ground appropriately. And so over here, we are off, but this is an evaluation off. We are evaluating, or I thought I evaluated that I planted in the ground properly, and meanwhile it wasn't. And that's where we have now the misalignment between buyer and seller. So now yesh lamo na in lamo na kemanda shadi bekadadamya v'yesh lamo na udama betlin al gavor ara. And so the Gemara says, and good. And now we go back to what we raised earlier, meaning that when the seeds now are in the ground, again they didn't take root yet, but the seeds are in the ground. Is it now the ground is just simply a container? But in other words, this is metaltalin or no? Maybe once it's under the ground, once it's in the ground, so now it's considered part and parcel of the ground, and therefore not going to be subject to ona. Okay, so all we got to do is just simply clarify what the case is under discussion. But what we didn't do on this question is we didn't answer the question. The Gemara did not resolve that when something is in the ground, not part of the ground, but simply in the ground, is it now become part and parcel of the ground? That's the question. The Gemara leaves the question unresolved. Next. Nishman alein o nishman alein. If there is litigation, so we know that ein nishman ala karka. In other words, we know that because we learned that in the Mishnah yesterday. It's one of the yesodas when it comes to shvuah. Shvuah is only on metaltalin and not on karka. Anyway, so now we're going to be asking the same exact question as it relates to something that is in the ground. So. Okay, it's the exact same question. A little bit unclear to me why exactly the Gemara is repeating the same question. Granted, it's a different application, so that's great, meaning it's a new nafkamina, but really what it comes down to is that it is principled, it is pinned to the same question that we asked just moments earlier in terms of how to view something that is under the ground. Omer Matiran, O Ein Omer Matiran. Okay, so here we go, and that is Omer. Now, in terms of timing, I couldn't get better in terms of timing, meaning that we know that what is the Omer? The Omer is the second day of Pesach. Okay. I know it's the third day, but I should have been reading this yesterday. Okay, so the timing is unbelievable. So when we get to the second day of Pesach, so we know that all the grains that grew over the course of this past season now become mutter. prior to the second day of Pesach. So all that grain that grew over this past season is called Chadash, Aser Min HaTorah, Chadash Aser Min HaTorah. And then when the second day of Pesach comes and goes, so then that grain becomes Mutter. Okay, this is the Omer. Note, by the way, that what I failed to, even as my short introduction, I failed to talk about the actual Karban Omer itself, because me and my Gullus mentality, meaning we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't offer the Karban Omer. So back in the day when we had a Beis HaMikdash, so then what was the matir? What allowed the grain? The bringing of the Karban Omer. Okay. But anyway, so with that stated, so now question on the table is the following, and that is that we harvested the grain, and then right before the second day of Pesach, we put it in the ground. And now our question is, same question, but new nafkamina, our third nafkamina. And that is the Omer going to be matir, yes or no? So Hechidami, the Gemara says, okay, but again, before I answer the question, I'd like a little more clarification. Ida ashreish tanina, ida la ashreish tanina. Did it take root or did it not take root? We know the answer to either one of those scenarios. Did not. Mishnah in Menachos. Im hishrishu kodem la omer homer matiram v'im lav asir nachiyav arm rabba. Over here, what is the Omer going to be matir? Only grains that took root prior to the second day of Pesach. Any grains that did not take root before the second day of Pesach is not going to be nitar, won't be permitted with the Omer. You need to now go till next year. Those grains that did not take root prior to this Omer, only is going to become mutter next Omer. So the Gemara says, okay, so effectively, look, it's a great question in principle, but practically speaking, don't we already know the answer? So the Gemara says, Lo tricha dechatzedinu vizarinu kodem la'omer, v'ase la'omer v'chalefi la'vayhu, v'lo ishush kodem la'omer. So the Gemara says as follows. What happened is that we already harvested the grain. And then after harvesting the grain, then we took the kernels and we put them in the ground before the omer. And now what happens is that the Omer passes over them. Now the Omer is not an object, the Omer is a time, but you understand. In other words, they were in the ground during Sfiras HaOmer, during the second day of Pesach, or what you and I call the first day of the Omer. Okay. By the way, if you're not already complicated and confused enough as it is, if I may, just to complicate things a little bit more, meaning we currently right now have what's called Sfeika Diyuma, meaning today happens to be the third day of Pesach, which means that it's a suffix that maybe today is in fact the second day of Pesach, right? So now for Sfiras HaOmer, we ignore that, meaning for the Sfiras HaOmer, so today is simply day number two. But in other words, when in our Golos, in our Sfeika Diyuma, so when does the Omer become Mutter? The Omer, because when do the grains become Mutter? Only on day three, not on day two, because we have to take into account the Sfeika Diyuma. Okay, if that... That wasn't helpful. Just what's it called? It's just I'm just as long as we were here, I just brought it up. Anyway, let's continue in the Gemara. So what happened was that you already harvested the grain. You put the kernels in the ground, and then the Omer passed over it. So kernel Omer va'asale Omer v'chalef elavai v'lo ishrish kernel Omer, but it didn't take root. So ma'al leminka demecha minayhu. So now what can I do now? Can I go ahead, take it, and can I go ahead now and eat it? Meaning, obviously, take it out of the ground and eat it. So, kemanda shadi bekada dami visharino baomer odum abadlinu agavara teku. And now here we have our nafkamina. Meaning, if the ground is just simply viewed as a container, the ground over here is nothing more than a Tupperware, so then we're fine. Because what if I took grains that I already harvested before Omer and I put it in Tupperware and now the Omer comes and goes? Obviously, the Omer's matir it. So if the ground is nothing more than just simply Tupperware, then we're fine. Alternatively, if now it becomes part and parcel of the ground, so once it becomes part and parcel of the ground, so I have a grain in the ground, even though it already grew and it already was harvested. But once I reinsert it into the ground, it becomes now part and parcel of the ground. And as a result of that, now the Omer is not going to be matir. Remember, the Omer is only going to be matir. Grains in the ground, that took root. Over here, we have a grain in the ground that has not yet taken root, and therefore the Omer is not going to be matir it. Okay, so teku, the Gemara says, good. So presumably every one of the above questions that we just asked is going to be tekud. Meaning this teku presumably is going on all of the above. Is there ona when I take a grain and put it in the ground and sell it while it's in the ground? Is there ona, yes or no? Okay, that's one teku. If we have a dispute over grains that are in the ground, meaning they were harvested, I put them in the ground, and now we have a dispute. And as part of the dispute, the resolution is going to be a shvur. Are we going to make a shvur on those grains? That also gets tekud. And the question that we just asked, in terms of whether or not the Omer goes and passes over these grains while they were already harvested and reinserted into the ground, is the Omer going to be matar them? That one gets tekud as well. So three questions in a row successively, and all three of them get tekud. Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, we're at the top of the Amud. Today's daf, and we continue. Amarav Amarav Chasa by Rabbi Amiona Ainlan Bitomekach Yeshamo Ainlan. Okay, so this idea by Ona, meaning what did our Mishnah tell us? Our Mishnah says that when it comes to Karka, when it comes to Hekdesh, now I know Avad Nimishtaris as well, but when it comes to Ona, to these items, so the Mishnah says Ein Behem Ona. Okay, that's what the Mishnah said. Now the Gemara's analysis goes like this. First, the Gemara quotes Rav Chasa, and this is Rabbi Ami's Suffolk. And the Suffolk is, when we say Ona'a, does it mean that they don't have Ona'a, but Bitomekach Yesh Lahem, Oein Lahem? And basically, the Gemara's question is as follows. Look, we know that Karka, Hekdesh, and again, Avadim Shtaris as well, but I'm just going to focus on those two. By Karka and Hektesh, we know that there is a reprieve of Ona. How big a reprieve are we talking about? Is it totally devoid of Ona altogether? Doesn't matter whether you overcharged a six, doesn't matter whether you went over six, meaning there's just simply no Ona whatsoever? Maybe no. Maybe it's a limited exclusion. Limited meaning that if I charge just Ona, meaning a six above or below, so then not bound by the rules of Ona. But if I went over a six, right, a six is 18%. So let's say we went now and I charged 20%, 30% over. So maybe even by Hektesh and even by Karka, there would be Ona. Now the Gemara's terminology over here, just so that we're all familiar, is that when I'm charging over a six, so instead of calling that Ona, so just to clarify, the Gemara calls it Bitul Mekach. In other words, it's just, it is so wildly over what the fair market value is, so then it would be subject to the Isser of, now I don't want to use the word Ona because I just want to try to be clear. So for Ona, that is a six, and Bitul Mekach is anything above a six. And the Gemara now wants to know that the exclusion of Karka and Hekdesh, is that a full exclusion, or is that only exclusion from the middle category of a six? So Rav Nachman, Hadar Rav Chasa Pashi Rabbi Ami Ona In Lahem Bitul Mekach Yesh Lahem. So after Rabbi Ami asked the question, Rabbi Ami then answered his own question, which is the exclusion is limited. It only is an exclusion from a six, but once I charge anything above that, Bitul Mekach, sale is voided. Rabbi Yona Amar Hektesh, Rabbi Yirmi Amar Karkaos. V'tavrei Mishmei de Rav Yochanan Amru. Okay, now, we've just learned together that it is not a full exclusion, it's only a partial exclusion. And now, when we say that it's a partial exclusion, is the partial exclusion going to go on every one of the examples of our Mishnah, or only maybe on some of the examples of our Mishnah? Now, I realize at this point in time, the Gemara now is going to get a little bit complicated, because here's what we have now on the table. I'm just resetting our discussion, reframing our discussion. We want to know that our Mishnah taught us that Hekdesh and Karka is excluded from Ona. That's what our Mishnah says. Ein behem Ona. We also now are debating, deliberating, when we say that it's excluded, is it a full exclusion or partial exclusion? Even as we say that there's a partial exclusion, right, that's what we're suggesting right now, not a full exclusion, meaning the partial exclusion is only when you're charging a six over, but anything above that is subject to Bitul Mekach, meaning the sale is voided. Is that going on Hekdesh or is that going on Karka? Okay, so that's where we're in the middle of discussing right now. And the Gemara points out that it is there are two opinions on this matter. So Manda Amar hekdesh kol shekein karka, man damar karka v'hekdesh eslo. Okay, now, if you're saying that that there's bitul mekach and hekdesh, if there's bitul mekach and hekdesh, for sure there's going to be bitul mekach and karka. Right? Meaning that if I'm charging, let's say 20%, 25% above what is fair market value, and that's going to void a hekdesh, quote unquote, sale, so then for sure it's going to avoid a regular sale.
Is that a kalachomer?
It's, in other words, it stands to reason. Yeah. We'll call it a kalachomer. It stands to reason. However, if I maintain that bitul mekach is only on karka, but maybe it wouldn't apply to hekdesh. Now, how does that thinking go? Gemara goes on to explain. So man damar karka of hekdesh l'slo. So the Gemara says kiddush mol damar shmol hekdesh shav man alach shechila shav pruta mechulal. The way it works is because of the din of Shmuel. Okay, just recently we mentioned Shmuel, but now today's daf Nun Zion. We are formally introducing Shmuel, and if my memory is good, and it's not. But if it's good, this is the first time in the Masechta we're bringing this position of Shmuel. In our Masechta. In other Masechtas, it comes up numerous times. Okay. So, and the halacha of Shmuel is as follows. And that is that, look, when I deconsecrate, we've been talking about Chilul so much in this fourth parak, right? The dapim of Nun Beis, Nun Gimel, Nun Dalet. Goodness gracious. We really spent a lot of time talking about Chilul. And that is that I'm going to deconsecrate, right? The Meister Sheni has Kedusha. I'm now going to be Mechal. I'm going to deconsecrate. You and I would normally think that when I deconsecrate, so what do I need to do? Dollar for dollar value. Now, of course, ideally, of course, dollar for dollar value. Shmuel introduces us to the idea that, even though that is an ideal, bidi eved, post facto, I could be Mechal, a something which is Shav Emana, that's a lot of money, and I could be mechala onto a pruta, and that works. Now, over here, obviously, we're not going dollar for dollar. In fact, that is a wild swing of something that is valued a lot, and you could be mechala onto something which is just the smallest currency. Okay. Now, that means that according to Shmuel, if I subscribe to Shmuel, clearly there is not going to be bitul mekach by hekdesh. So, if I now know that there is bitul mekach by karka, that doesn't necessarily inform me about hekdesh because we could be subscribing to the rule of Shmuel. Okay, so where are we right now? So we are. I know there's a lot. There's a lot going on over here. So we are discussing our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that there's no ona when it comes to karka and when it comes to hekdesh. And the Gemara wants to know how big an exclusion are we talking about? Are we excluding just a six? Or are we excluding even above a six? And if, in fact, we're excluding just a six, not above a six, is that specific to karka, or is that specific to hekdesh, or both? Okay? Those are the various questions that we are raising. Tanan Hasa. Let's take a look at our Mishnah in Temura. Imaya kodesh ba'mom yasa l'chulin. Sarach la'asos lo damim. Now, I have a karban. Now, if the karban does not have a mom on it, so can I transfer the kedusha from one karban to another? Let's be clear. No, you cannot. Now, what if you try to do that? You violated the iser of temura, and you're penalized. And both animals have kedusha. Okay, good. That we all know. Now, what if the animal was a karban, but now has a mum, has a physical blemish? Now, what I can do is that I can transfer the kedusha. I can transfer the kedusha to money. I can transfer the kedusha to another animal. The Mishnah in Temur tells me, the Mishnah in Temur tells me, so if the animal was a balmum, so yatsa l'chulin, so I can deconsecrate it, but now, tzarech la'asos lo damim, but now when I deconsecrate it, let's say this animal that I'm currently deconsecrating is valued at $100, the animal that now I transfer the kedusha to is, let's say, $90, that's a shortfall to the Beis HaMikdash. I got to make up that shortfall. That $10, I got to make it up. Good. That's the Mishnah in Temura. Amar Rav Yochanan yatsa l'chulin dvar Torah, tzarech la'asos lo damim midivreihem. So Rav Yochanan says, that idea that I have to make up the shortfall, that's a rabbinic legislation. That's not min haTorah. And Reish Lakish Amar, after Chlasos Odamim in the Torah. And Reish Lakish says, no, the idea that you have to make up the shortfall, that's a din de araisa. Now, b'mayaskinan, ilema bichteona b'halema Reish Lakish Ar Chlasos Odamim Dvar Torah v'atnan il dvar nshin lamona kakav avadim v'shars v'akdeshos. Now, I say a shortfall. How much are we talking about? If we're talking about kideona'a, which means a sixth, right? Not the example that I gave, by the way. My example, 190, that's 10%. That's far short of a sixth. So in other words, if I wanted to give an example of what we're describing right now, well, it's not a whole number. But in other words, so it's 100 and you're knocking off 18.6666. Anyway, it's whatever. If it's a sixth that we're talking about, so the Gemara says, well, we know a sixth is excluded. Meaning, if it's exactly a sixth, nothing to discuss. That for sure is excluded from Onah. So, Ela Bitomekach. So the Gemara says, we're going above a sixth. Okay. So in other words, 20%. The animal, let me give out straightforward numbers. The animal was valued at 100, and I'm deconsecrated onto another animal that's 80. That's $20 short, 20% short. That's exceeding Onah. So now, Bahalim Rav Yochan Sarach Lasos Odamim Medivrem Ba'amar Rav Yona Agdeshos Rav Yirmi Amar Akarkos V'Tarvay B'Shmid Rav Yochan Amri Ona In Lahem Bitl Mekach Yesh Lahem. So the Gemara says, okay, but we quoted Rav Yochanan a couple minutes earlier this morning that says that the exclusion of Hekdesh is only for Ona'a, not for Bitl Mekach, meaning that by Bitl Mekach there is no exclusion, which would mean then that if there's a shortfall of 100 down to 80, I have to make it up not as rabbinic legislation, I have to make it up min ha-Torah. And then what we have is an inconsistency within Rav Yochanan. So, la'olam be-bitomekach ve'epoch to Rav Yochanan le-Reish Lakish, and to Reish Lakish to Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara says, okay, I hear you. And so what we're going to do is as follows. Because we had this statement of Rav Yochanan over here, so we're going to take the positions of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish earlier, and we're going to flip it. In other words, the Gemara doesn't like doing this in general. In other words, just simply taking positions, flipping names to the positions. But in order to create consistency over here, we're going to flip the positions. And b'maikem iflagi. So b'dishmol damar shmol hekdesh shava manah shechila shava pruta mechulal mar islay dishmol mar leislay dishmol. And the Gemara points out over here. In other words, when I have an animal valued at 100 and I deconsecrate it to another animal of 80. Creating a 20% shortfall, $20, 20% shortfall. So what? And I have to make up that 20. And we're now deliberating: is that a din d'oraisa? Is that a din d'rabbanan? What we're really arguing is within the shita of Shmuel, because Shmuel says that when you're mechalel, when I deconsecrate, Shmuel's position is it doesn't have to be dollar for dollar. It could be there doesn't have to be any ratio whatsoever. I can go from 100 to 1. I can go from 1,000 to 1. There's no ratio. So if I subscribe to Shmuel, then clearly, not only is there no ona by Hekdesh, there's no bitul mekach when it comes to Hekdesh as well. Good. On the other hand, if I don't subscribe to Shmuel, so then that means that although Hekdesh is excluded from ona, but it's not excluded from bitul mekach. Okay. I admit, by the way, in other words, what I just presented is complicated. I recognize that. Hopefully, right, I saw pretty clearly, and hopefully I articulated pretty clearly, but I'm just acknowledging that that was a tough piece of grammar that we just went through. So the Gemara says, it could very well be that the Mishnah in Temura was bichdei ona. So the discrepancy between the animal that I'm deconsecrating and the animal now that is accepting the Kedusha is exactly a six. It could very well be. And what we then don't have to do is we don't have to flip the sheets of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. And v'derav chista kamifli da'amar my ein lehem ona ein a b'toras ona. Now, what we could do over here is that we can give a totally new interpretation to our Mishnah. Okay, everyone get ready, because just out of nowhere, well, it's not out of nowhere, it's in the interest of keeping Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan's positions, and, you know, in their original position. So, but what we're going to now introduce is a totally new way to look at our Mishnah. What did our Mishnah say? When it comes to Karka and when it comes to Hekdesh, Ein Behem Ona, there's no Ona. And now, what we are suggesting, Ein Bemona means, is that there is no margin of error. Zero margin of error. Meaning, up until now in this perek, the only thing we were entertaining is, up to a six, forgivable. At a six, ona. Greater than a six, right? Avoided. Now, what the Gemara is suggesting is that when our Mishnah said that when it comes to Karka, when it comes to Hektesh, that there's no Ona, meaning that there's no Ona, zero margin of error. Oh. And now, if Rav Chista is right, so that means to say that if I deconsecrate an animal onto another animal and the discrepancy between them is at a six, and quite frankly, by the way, we can even add, even if it's less than a six, a seventh, an eighth, a ninth, whatever, any error would be unforgivable and would void the transaction. If that's true, so in other words, if Rav Chista is right, so then we could keep Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in their positions, and now Rav Yochanan would be consistent. In other words, assuming that he subscribes to this viewpoint of Rav Chista. Okay. Meisvei ribis v'ona lejovein ribis v'ona lehekdesh. So the Gemara says, okay, but can I just show you a brisa? We're on the top of Nun Zayin Amud Beis. And in the brisa on the top of Nun Zayin Amud Beis, it says that there's ribis and there's ona when it comes to private transactions, but not when it comes to hektesh. So, and over here, it sounds like there's no ona when it comes to hektesh. And you want to now tell me that when we say that there's no ona by hektesh, meaning that means to say that there's no margin of error? It can't be. So the Gemara says, Mi'alima mamasis, and the Gemara says, I know we just said it can't be, but it can. Because look, when we cited our Mishnah used almost the same exact language. Enokibna toros ana'a. Hachanami ribis vidin ona lehejot, vein ribis vidin ona lehektesh. So we'll do the same thing in the Braisa. When the Braisa said ona'a, we just simply meant the rules of ona'a, meaning the numbers of ona'a. Less than a six, greater than a six. What we're saying is that when it comes to hedge out, you operate within those numbers. But when dealing with hektesh, throw out all the numbers. Any derivation, any deviation from fair market value is unforgivable. No margin of error. So ihachi hainu diktani seifa chomer behedge out mebe hektesh. So the Gemara says, well, if you're right, in other words, if that's a correct interpretation of the Braisa, read on in the Braisa. Because the Braisa then goes on to say that this is where the laws are more severe for private transactions than they are for hektish transactions. So the Gemara says, but I don't understand. What do you mean? If our understanding of ona when it comes to hektish is that there's no margin of error, it's not stricter for private transactions. In fact, just the opposite. It's stricter for hektish transactions. So the Gemara says, aribis. So the Gemara says, no, that part of the Braisa wasn't talking about ona'a. In the world of ona'a, in this current interpretation, so obviously it's going to be stricter for hektish than it is for private transactions, obviously. But when the Braisa says, but it's stricter for private transactions, it was talking about ribis. Why? Because when I lend you money, I can lend with zero interest. But that's not true as it relates to hektesh. So the Gemara says, so aribis, so listening ami chomer behektesh me behejot. So then if that's true, so why wouldn't the Braisa then also say, well, there's something that's more strict when it comes to hektesh than it is with when it comes to private transactions. Notably, ona'a, meaning by hektesh, no margin of error. By ona'a, I'm sorry, by a private transaction, up to a six margin of error. So the Gemara says no. The reason why the Braisa didn't want to do that is because then it would be such a misleading comment. The Braisa would say, you know, right? These are the chumras of hektesh over hedjot, as if to say these and only these. But that's not true. Meaning we know that when dealing with hektesh, there are so many stringencies that apply to hektesh. So the Braisa didn't want to make a statement that would be that misleading. Okay, so where are we right now? So we are in the middle of a discussion of when I transfer Kedusha from one animal to another animal, the Mishnah and Temura, and it is not dollar for dollar. But in other words, there is a discrepancy. So what kind of discrepancy is allowable? And what about the difference? And do I have to make up the shortfall? So the starting point for this discussion is that the Mishnah in Temura says I have to make up the shortfall. That's the starting point. Then Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, is that a din d'oraisa or is that a din d'rabbanan? Then it becomes a question of when we say that there is no onah when it comes to hektesh. What does that mean? There's no onah altogether. There is a little bit of onah, meaning a sixth, or maybe there's no room and margin for error whatsoever. Those are the three possibilities that the Gemara went through. And then the hard part, meaning already that's hard, and then the hard part is just aligning all the Amoraim so that they would be in sync with one another. That's the sugya that we just did. Admittedly, it's a complicated sugya. Admittedly, I did it too quickly. But anyway, that's what we just covered. Okay, ribis the hektesh hechidami. Okay, and let's finish up today with one more quick discussion. And that is that there is ribis by hektesh. What? So over here, everyone was kind. And didn't push back when I originally said that there's, when it comes to hektesh, you know, there is no ribbis. Okay? What does that mean? Right? What's happening over here? So the ribbis hektesh hechidami. So ilam de usve gizbar mea be mea ve esrim velo mal gizbar kevin shemal gizbar yatsum asav lechulam vehavelu dehejot. So the Gemara says as follows. Well, maybe the hektesh will be serving as a bank, right? Where I'm going to go to the gizbar and say, hey, do me a favor, right? I'd like to borrow money from hektesh. Sure, no problem at all. And so I'll borrow 100 and I'll pay back 120. Now, obviously, between you and I, so that would be ribbis, and that obviously is usher min haTorah. But maybe when it comes to hektesh, maybe it would be mutter. To which the Gemara says, that's a nice thought, but that doesn't work at all. And I'll tell you why. I read it, but now I'm going to explain it. I'll tell you why. Because if the gizbar has hektesh money, and he hands it to somebody else without deconsecrating it onto an item, so now the gizbar was just in violation of me'ila. Good. Now it's not good, but in other words, but hopefully, right, that you understood that point. And now, once the gizbar violates me'ila, what happens to that money? It's yotze lechulin. It no longer belongs to the gizbar. So in other words, when the gizbar takes the money, hektesh money, and doesn't deconsecrate it, but just simply hands it to another individual, so he violates me'ila, the money is now yotze lechulin, it's no longer hektesh money. Okay. And so therefore, there's no loan of what to speak about. In other words, what happens at this point in time simply is that it's the gizbar's responsibility, liability, and the gizbar obviously has to now turn around and reimburse the base of mikdash with $100. Okay, so that's not an example of ribbis. So when we say that there's no ribbis by hektesh, what does that look like? So the gemara says, I'll tell you what it looks like. I'm Rav Oshia Hachamah Ma'iskin and Kigon. Kibol Lav Sapik Slasos Me'arba. And that is that what the base of mikdash does is that they contract with their suppliers. And they lock in prices. And we're going to be talking about this extensively in the fifth parak of Bava Metzia. Okay, so if you speak like this, in other words, if you understand business like this, and I don't, but if you do, so then all this is going to just, you're going to have such an easy time with this. Here's an example. We're going to lock into a price, and that is that for every seller, so the Beis HaMikdash says we're going to be able to, for every seller that we give you, they say to their suppliers, in this case, it's a wheat supplier. So for every seller that we give you, you're going to provide for us 4 saw. Okay, good. So they locked in the price. So amdu mishalosh. It happens to be that the inflation. And now for that one seller, instead of being able to get 4 saw, now you only get 3 saw. Okay, so unfortunately, in our world that we live in, we could totally relate. Okay, the purchasing power has gone down. So now, are you allowed to do that? So we're going to be discussing this in the fifth parak of Bava Metzia. And I'm going to say it simply, I'm going to oversimplify for now. No, you can't do that. Okay. Now, again, by the way, that no over there is not, it's not an easy no. It's when we get to the fifth parak, we're going to learn that sometimes you can. But just for our purposes right now, no, you cannot do that. No, you cannot do that. Because effectively what just happened over here is that you gave money and you're going to get back more. Okay. Than what you gave. Now, granted, by the way, again, it gets complicated because when you gave the money, it was worth four. And it was a price fluctuation. But for our purposes right now, you can't do that. Let's just say it simply. You can't do it. You and I can't do it. The Beis HaMikdash can. That's what the Braisa meant when the Braisa says that the Beis HaMikdash is not subject to ribbis. So, Kiddinan, in fact, we have a Mishnah, right? We saw this Mishnah together in Shkalim. In fact, when the Beis HaMikdash contracts prices, they're in the driver's seat. Yad Hektish Al Yona. In the example that we just gave, where they contracted for four saw for every salah, and then after contracting the price, after locking into the price, so then the price of wheat went up. You, the supplier, are going to be supplying based on the locked in contracted price, and it would work in the other direction as well. Were you locked in at three, and the price went down? You, the supplier, now have to give the discounted price. Okay. Anyway. But the point is that you and I, if we are contracting prices and trying to lock into prices and I'm purchasing a future, you and I can't do that. But the Beis HaMikdash is allowed to do that. That's one interpretation. And then just finishing up, Rapapa Amar Hacha, Bavni Binyan, Mesiros Gizbar Skinan. We're talking about people supplying stones and any construction material to the Gizbar. Kedishmol, Damer Shmuel, Bonim, Bechol, the Acher Kach Makdishin. So what they could do is that they could build it while in a state of chulin, and then afterwards be makdishin. Again, another example where the purchasing of the item is going to be occurring after the item was already handed over. Again, and a private transaction would smack of ribbis for the Beis HaMikdash. Totally fine. You're totally allowed to do that. Okay, we're going to pause over here. Tashlumi Kefal is where we're going to pick it up tomorrow. Okay, let's recap. Let's review. Okay, tough daf today, but good. But a good daf today. Number one, we went over a series of questions regarding Onaz or Onaz by Schiros, yes or no? The Gemara said yes, absolutely. When you rent an item, so you're governed by the rules of Onaz. Okay, that one we started off nice and simple. Then three questions all related to, let's say I take a kernel of wheat, which I already harvested, which is already detached from the ground, metautalim, but then I put it in the ground and sell it while it's in the ground. Or is there going to be a shvu on it? Or is the omer going to be matir it? So those are three questions that we asked successively, and we weren't successful in answering these questions. In other words, we don't know how halacha views something that is under the ground. Is the ground just simply Tupperware? Or is it going to become part and parcel of the ground? That question remains unresolved. And then for the remainder of today's daf, almost the remainder, right, most of Nun Zion is revolving around the following question. Our Mishnah taught us that there's no Ona by Karka and there's no Ona by Hekdesh. Does that mean there's no Ona, period, done? Or does that mean that it's limited in terms of the Isser of Ona? Meaning it's limited in terms of how excluded from Ona is it? Maybe it's only excluded from the six. But if we go above a six, what the Gemara calls Bitul Mekach, maybe it's not excluded from that as well. And we opened up that door and we discussed it regarding Hektish, regarding Karka, maybe both. And by Hektish, we spent a lot of time today talking about maybe by Hektish, maybe it's not subject to Ona at all. That's the position of Shmuel. Not even subject to Bitul Mekach, according to the position of Shmuel. Yes, there's rabbinic legislation that you have to make up the shortfall, but that's a rabbinic legislation. That's one possibility. The other extreme that we went to today is the Shita of Rav Chista, where Rav Chista says that when it comes to Hektesh, there is no margin of error whatsoever. Min HaTorah. That's Rav Chista. Good. And so that is a wide range of position regarding Ona and Hektesh. And then finally, on the Amud Beis, we quoted a Braisa where the Braisa says that when it comes to Hektesh, there's no Ona and there's also no Ribbis as well. What does that mean that there's no Ribbis by Hektesh? So the Gemara took a moment but came up with a couple of scenarios of what does it mean that Hektesh is not governed by the laws of Ribbis.